In 1974, writer-cartoonist Steve Abbott moved from Atlantis to San Francisco, where he became involved in the poetry scene as the co-editor of Poetry Flash and creator of Soup magazine. At home, he was a single father raising his daughter Alicia. She writes about his open bisexuality at a time when gay rights was in its early days and of her father's later struggle with AIDS in a memoir called Fairyland, a memoir of my father. It's published by W.W. Norton, and I'm very pleased it has brought Alicia Abbott to our show today. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Now, Fairyland, among other things, suggests fantasy. Do you think of your childhood as having a lot of fantasy in it?
Absolutely. Because my father was a poet and artist, I think he really was admiring my sort of child's perspective on the world. And so I think that he sort of borrowed my view of fantasy to sort of add to his artwork in ways. And so
he used some of the things you said to him in his poems?
He used some of the things I said to him in his poems. He posed with me for the cover and inside number of his books where we would dress up. And as well, he would illustrate his books with my cartoons.
Why did you and your father move to San Francisco in 1974?
Well, my mother had just had died in a car accident in 1973.
It was a rather awful accident.
Yeah, it was. It was a terrible accident. At that point, they were married, but they both had an open relationship, and her lover at that time was mixed up with some drugs and gun running, and she was bailing him out of jail, and on her drive back, got into this car accident, and he survived the crash, and she didn't. And I think for my father, she was something of the anchor in his life. And after she died, he didn't have much for him in Atlanta, and so decided to move us to San Francisco, which at that point was brimming with excitement.
Now, an open marriage because he was gay?
Well, yes. I mean, when they met, they were both in Students for a Democratic Society, so they were sort of self-proclaimed Marxist. And I think they really believed in revolution of a sort, but also of the family and the family structure, and that when they first met, my father introduced himself as bisexual, and she said, "Well, that just means you can love all of humanity instead of just half of it," and so they had an open relationship, and lived in a commune situation for a while, even.
Well, you say at first their marriage was kind of like a sitcom.
Well, I think my father laughed at first because at one point she was sort of making him dinner and he was coming home and he felt like it was like a sitcom. But over time, he became the house husband and was working from home while she was off at a job.
Now, he had told her he was bisexual. What about other people? He had been Emory's student government president at one point. Did people know he was gay at school?
He actually came out in the Emory Wheel, which was their paper, and this was shortly after Stonewall, and there was just a lot of excitement in the gay rights movement, and so he thought it was important that he come out publicly, and he was already a student body president, so he had sort of a platform.
And was it accepted at Emory in Atlanta, Georgia?
Yeah. I mean, at Emory in Atlanta, Georgia, there was a burgeoning gay scene, if you can believe it. My father was one of the founders of a local gay liberation front, and he was involved with the Great Speckled Bird, which was one of the great underground papers and was the gay lib editor. But there was just a lot of openness, and I think at that point, the gay rights struggle was sort of seen as an extension of the civil rights struggle, so that, you know, the straight and gay brothers and sisters would work together toward these same goals.
Still, he might have felt after he lost your mother that he should move to a gay-friendlier city, New York or San Francisco. How old were you when you moved to San Francisco?
I was like 3 and a half, probably.
And you lived in an apartment in Haight-Ashbury, right in the center of everything?
Well, yeah, when we first moved in, we were in the Haight-Ashbury, that's right.
And what was it like for a kid under these circumstances? Was San Francisco child-friendly? Or the part of San Francisco you were growing up in?
Well, the neighborhood, I wouldn't say was child-friendly in that, you know, in 1974, it was about 7 years after the Summer of Love, and that sort of initial energy had burned out, and there had been a lot of hard drugs that came in and crime, and there was a lot of boarded-up storefronts. But it was cheap, and so a lot of searchers, both gay and straight, moved to the neighborhood. And my dad made friends with a lot of the single moms in the neighborhood who were sometimes actresses. And we all went to the Haight-Ashbury Daycare Center together.
Well, now, of course, the corner of Haight and Ashbury, there's a gap. So that neighborhood's changed a lot since you were there.
Yes. Last time I went to visit, it looked like a sort of Disneyfied version of the hippie era with, you know, selling Haight-Ashbury mugs and Jimi Hendrix posters.
How did your father's friends in the gay community respond to the fact that he had a child?
Well, I think it was a little hard for my dad because at that point he didn't know anyone else with kids. And so a lot of people he was meeting were young and excited to go out to bars. And, you know, having a kid around sort of being whiny and demanding, which kids can be, was...
Not you, Alicia.
Oh, yes, even me. But I think I kind of cramped my dad's style, as it were. But you know, we had friends still.
And he, what happened when he decided he wanted to get out for an evening? Were there people he could leave you with?
Well, I think strategically and by necessity, we lived with roommates. It was affordable. But I think he preferred that to our living alone because it was access to free childcare. So he could have the roommates watch me while he goes out. And that worked out.
My guest is Alicia Abbott. She's written a memoir of her father called Fairyland. What was Cloud House?
Cloud House was a poetry collective that rented a storefront in the Mission, which today is a very Tony neighborhood, but in the 70s was pretty run down. And my father stumbled into it one night by accident, and they would have open readings every week, and they would stage street readings, and basically it was a community place that would sort of support other writers and put posters up on the wall. And it was all about sort of feeling free to express yourself. And they would do street readings, and they eventually formed their own publishing house that published some of my dad's first books of poetry.
So San Francisco was a pretty good place for a poet to be living.
It was a wonderful place for a poet to be living in, but you know, this was in the years after the Beats, there was a sort of a desire for mysticism and following your true passion and this sort of experimental poetry, which was also a little bit indulgent at times. But there was a lot of poetry readings happening around the city all the time, and the city itself was cheap enough that you could create a poetry event and just live off food stamps.
Now, your father kept a diary?
He kept diaries since he was in high school, yes.
So that must have been good as source material for writing a memoir about him. But what was it like to read about your father's personal life from his point of view? There must have been things that you had been rather curious about. Did you get the answers to them?
Yes, absolutely. The thing that's funny was I'd always known my father kept journals, and when I was a girl, I would actually search through the journals for my own name because I like to see episodes of myself as a girl when I was younger, and so it was so funny. But as I rediscovered the journals after he died and also discovered a bunch of journals I'd never seen before, I suddenly had access to the side of his life, his private life, and what his relationship with my mom was really like. And I think that was a tremendous resource in terms of writing the book.
Like his writing that he was unsure about your mother's decision to keep the baby, who turned out to be you. That must have been kind of bizarre to read.
Yes. I think that over time, as I'm an older, you know, I have two children, I'm in my 40s, I feel like I can sort of read entries like that with a lot more understanding for what he was going through. I think if reading that as a 20-something, I was maybe more hurt by it. But in the end, I know though at first he was ambivalent about having me, once I was born, he loved it and was very excited.
Well, I can understand under the circumstances. This was not necessarily your typical marriage, and there was a good chance that it wouldn't last very long. So having a child might have been irresponsible.
Well, they didn't have a lot of money, and And it wasn't necessarily that responsible because of the instability of their lives, but my mom was determined to keep me.
Well, were you ever disappointed with some of the choices he made when you were reading the journals?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a very different time of parenting today than it was in the 70s. I mean, there was always a lot more freedom then, but I think my father was sort of making up the rules, and sometimes he made some pretty poor choices on, left me alone one night when he went out, and I was about 4 or 5. Those are kind of shocking for me to read, and I definitely can feel disappointed, and I have to sort of deal with those feelings on my own.
You also had to pretty much research your mother, didn't you?
Absolutely.
You can't just Google mom.
I think that was the strange imbalance in this writing this book is because my mother died when I was only 2 and a half, I have no memories of her, and almost nothing of hers was saved. And whereas I have all of my father's writing, and so it was very important for me to try to understand her perspective and not just go by my father's sort of version of events.
You write that to grow up the child of a gay parent in the 70s and 80s was to live with secrets, even in San Francisco, gay-friendly San Francisco?
Even in gay-friendly San Francisco. I was at a private school, and at that point there were no open gay parents that I knew of, and there was also no open gay parents in the media. There was no Modern Family, and even though my father's world, there was people were free to be themselves at school. I didn't see anyone who was like me, and so I did feel I lived with secrets.
Could you have spent more time with your mother's parents? They were in Illinois. Often that's what happens in situations like this. The kid goes to the grandparents.
Well, I did go to my grandparents every summer. That was sort of a way for them to give my father a break and also to get to know me, since these were my maternal grandparents and they lost my mother when she was just 27. I think on some level, my father was somewhat afraid that they would take me, that his lifestyle was too wild and he needed to, be careful. But in truth, I think they wouldn't have ever done anything like that.
Well, was your father looking to settle down and find a partner and have something like a marriage?
Well, in that era, the idea of an actual marriage was out of the question in the terms of it, like the possibilities of legal marriage wasn't happening. I think that he was interested in a long-term relationship, but that was hard to find. And I'm sure also being a single father with a small child made that difficult as well.
And then there is the problem often with a single parent when they bring somebody home, whether it's a heterosexual situation or a gay situation, the kid often feels threatened. Did that happen when your father brought home Charlie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think when I was very young, I was attached to my father's first couple of boyfriends, but when they left us, it hurt me. And so I think after that, I was a lot more defensive. And also, especially as a teenager, I was very critical and I thought that my dad had a bad taste in boyfriends and he was wasting his time.
When you were older, you found solace in sitcoms like Family Ties and Silver Spoons, a kind of a way of looking for what a normal family was like.
I think, like a lot of children of the 70s and 80s, the TV was my companion, unfortunately. And so I would watch these shows, and they provided some comfort, I guess.
How old were you when you became aware that AIDS was becoming a problem in the community?
Well, the first coverage of AIDS in the news weeklies was in the early, like probably 1981, 82, 83. But the summer that AIDS awareness really became everywhere was the summer of 1985 when Rock Hudson finally admitted that he had AIDS, and Ryan White, who was a hemophiliac from Indiana, also had AIDS, and his local school refused to admit him. So at that point, there was you couldn't get away from it. I mean, in terms of the media, you couldn't get away from it.
You write about a moment in a trip to Israel during your senior year in high school when you prayed at the Wailing Wall for your father to never get AIDS. And then how much after that did he tell you he had AIDS? He was HIV positive.
Well, that's really the strange thing, Leonard, in writing the book was I have so many very distinct memories and details that for the sake of space, I have to cut. But I actually couldn't remember the exact moment that my father told me he was HIV positive.
But he was hinting to you, wasn't he?
No, I don't think he was. My memory of that trip to Israel was a time I knew he didn't have it because I prayed that he wouldn't get it. But it turns out when I was researching for the book, I read in his journals and discovered that he had first tested positive in 1986, which was a year before I went to Israel. So I think he must have had that information but then decided to not share it with me. And it's been difficult to pinpoint exactly when and how I found out.
Well, you're writing about an unorthodox childhood, but on another level, as somebody who has had a couple of kids, do you find a lot of things in common?
A lot of things in common.
With the concerns your father had bringing you up? You bring up your own kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a lot more sympathy for his struggles trying to be a working writer while also raising a child, though, of course, he also did it by himself. And so I have, I guess, a lot of respect for what he was able to accomplish. And I think as well about how I want to raise my children because of how he raised me and how I want to give them a sort of fairyland, too.
Alicia Abbott's work has appeared in Real Simple, Salon, TheAtlantic.com. She's also worked in public radio here at WNYC, in fact. And she's written Fairyland, A Memoir of My Father, which is published by Norton. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much, Leonard. It was a pleasure.